know. She got her start in the program at the end of 2006 in Washington, D.C., and now lives in California, and has been sober since 2009, and has come to a few of our Unity conferences and international convention last year. So I'd like to welcome Mary.
Hello, my name is Mary, and I am a sexaholic. You know, when I came into this program, before I came into this program, I was miserable. I was the opposite of happy, joyous, and free. I was miserable, but I was masquerading it as fun. I lived in chaos and anger and rage that manifested as lust. And I am just so grateful for just this journey so far. So what was it like? Well, I come from a long line of sexaholics. You know, I can trace it back at least four generations, if not longer. My mom was a good sexaholic. I'm the oldest of four kids between my parents. They've been married 8 times, and my mom's been proposed to 13 times. I used to explain her as a sunflower and a hurricane, and or a tornado, and reading in the big book when they talked about us addicts being like, you know, a hurricane or a tornado, it's like, yeah, that was my mom, you know? So I come by it honestly, and with that many stepdads, you know, I may have had sexual abuse. I have no idea. If I'm supposed to remember it, I will. If I'm not, I won't. But I definitely have dissociation for things. And that's okay, you know? It's just part of the journey. So as a kid, there was this story. There was this children's story that I remember reading in the first grade. It was called The Whipping Boy. And this boy was the, there was a prince, and he received all of the punishments for this prince, and that was his lot in life, was to be hurt and punished for this prince. And I remember reading that book in the first grade going, that's me. That's what I'm supposed to be. That's who I am, what I am. That's the only thing I'm worth. Yeah. So what is my addiction? My addiction is see me, love me, tell me I'm okay. And with my first kiss, I was hooked. It was, I had found the solution to my life. That was it. And everything I did past that point, my end goal was to get that hit again, to make myself feel okay. Acceptance and love, that's what I wanted. But I didn't see myself as worthwhile enough to get it in any way but that. And, you know, it was a good high at the same time, so come on. But there were also times when, you know, I was ashamed and I still did it. Like, I have this distinct memory. I was in the sixth grade and I would take the bus home, and it was like an hour and a half bus ride. And I was sitting in the back of the bus, and these like seniors-ish in high school came to the back of the bus and were sitting next to me. And one of the guys was putting his hands up my shorts, and I was embarrassed, and I kind of didn't like it. And for the rest of the school year, anytime a friend's mom would offer me a ride home, which would take 10 minutes, I never could accept it. And I took the bus for the rest of the year, the hour and a half bus ride home, because I had to. I couldn't not. You know, there are so many other things. I remember turning, I was in Laughlin, Nevada with a friend of mine. We were 13, and we were in an arcade, and her mom and stepdad were off somewhere. And some guy came into the arcade and asked us if we wanted to go get stoned with him. And, you know, my friend actually had some boundaries and said no. And I was like, yeah, I'll go. And I have no memory from turning around to leave with him until I walked back into the arcade, except for one picture in my mind of being out in the middle of the desert in the back of his car and he's having sex with me. So is there probably other stuff? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Like I said, you know, it's a journey. So this is my solution. And I couldn't say no. I started dating regularly around 13-ish. And up until I hit my bottom, I was consistently dating at least one person, if not more. I've cheated on every single person I've ever dated. I slept with all of my friends or all of my friends' significant others. As I shared earlier in the conference, I have one friend left from before I hit my bottom because I ruined all of the relationships. You know, I needed to be needed. I needed to be wanted. And my acting out along that whipping boy thing very much went into BDSM, and I thought I wasn't worth anything. And the more I was hurt, the more I felt relief. And it got to the point where I was almost dying. And I had a therapist tell me that, you know, it may take a really long time, or I may never get a reset back to a normal template. And, you know, it's not totally there. It's better than it was. But there are consequences for my addiction, right? So what else? What happened? So like I said, all of the things that I did, you know, in the end were about that see me, love me, tell me I'm okay, and about, you know, getting my lust. So I worked really hard, you know, in good addict obsessive fashion. I got into med school. And within a few months, so I've struggled with depression and suicidality for most of my life. I shared earlier that my first suicide attempt was in the second grade. My mom pulled me off of a like 40-foot drop off. And it has been a struggle my whole life. But within a few months of starting med school, I was severely depressed again. And I was like, okay, so I need to get back on medication. I need to, you know, like start seeing a therapist. And within about a year, we had just finished our psychiatry rotation, and we had just gone over the addiction cycle, and this counselor is asking me, okay, so what do you do, and then what do you do after that, and he's writing it down, and he turns around, and he goes, do you know what this is? And I look at it, and it's the addiction cycle, and he's like, I think you're a sex addict, and I was like, shit. And at the same time, so my dad had brought me to AA meetings when I was like 6. And my mom had started going to Al-Anon when I was, you know, 13-ish. And I had seen our family change. I had seen the ability to, like, have conversations. My younger siblings could talk about feelings. Like, what are those? You know? I know happy and numb, unless you're dying. And then, you know, maybe I feel something. And so I was like, oh, maybe there's hope. And there was this little spark of hope. And so I started going to SA meetings. And luckily there were some like right across the street from my med school, right at lunchtime. It was awesome. Except I would go to a meeting and the feelings that came up were so overwhelming that I felt like my insides were liquefying, like I had Ebola or something, like I was going to die. And so I would book it home to go act out because I couldn't handle the feelings. And so it went on like that for a year and a half. And during that time, I proposed to a guy that I had dated on and off for 14 years. And he was my best friend. I had eventually proposed to him, not because I wanted to marry him, I just didn't want to be alone. And I hated that. And I couldn't stop myself. So over that next year and a half, my depression was worse and worse and worse, and I eventually got to the point where I knew I was going to kill myself, and I walked into my dean's office and I said, you know, if I take this exam today, I'm going to fail it, and if I don't take time off from school, I'm going to kill myself. And so I took some time off. I went to this weekend Sexaholics Anonymous retreat thing, and then I got set up to go to treatment. Except there was only like one or two that actually had a women's program, and you know, I'm a student and I'm totally on financial aid because I have a family of addicts and nobody's financially secure. And so, you know, it's all scholarships and loans, and I'm at the second most expensive medical school in the nation at the time. So yeah, I was like, okay, well, I'll just go to any treatment center and I'll just, you know, work on my depression and other things. So after about a week or two, I got kicked out because I was the only person that admitted I was a sexaholic, and I hooked up with somebody. And they didn't know what to do with that. The person that, you know, went out and used coke and found a prostitute was okay, but it was a good thing that I got kicked out, because I ended up going to a treatment program that had a women's only part. It was a few months after that, and I did put it off a week because the person who I called the crack of my sex addiction was coming out to the Bay Area where I was staying for a week, so I on the week that I was supposed to start treatment, so I put off treatment for a week so I could hang out with him for a week. I wouldn't suggest that. Not the best plan. Because just that, picking up that shovel and continuing to dig, and the what ifs, and that fantasy, that lust that just takes over in every way. So I went to treatment, and I was in withdrawal. I didn't know that there was an actual physical withdrawal from lust. For the first 2 weeks, laying on the bed hurt. I had to sleep on the floor because somehow that hurt less than sleeping on a bed. Every part of my body hurt. I mean, it was rough. And then, you know, I got a month sober. Like, I didn't think I could go a day, let alone a week. And then when I got a month sober, it was amazing. It was absolutely, there was another little spark of hope. Like, maybe I didn't have to be stuck doing this for the rest of my life. Got out of treatment, and, you know, I'd slip, I'd relapse, I'd come back, and it progressively got longer and longer. I tried to, because I'm very type A and I very have to win, I'm gonna win. In fact, my husband and I don't keep score when we play board games so that we stay married. It really does work, at least for both of us.
But so, okay, if this is the program, I'm going to work it, right? So I start in the Bay, halfway between the Bay Area and Sacramento, and I'm trying to find a sponsor, and I start to work the steps, and then I move back to DC to start med school again, and then I'm starting the steps again. And then when I was first in the program in DC, I had a sponsor, and then there were a bunch of us that were supposed to go on a bike ride and a bunch of us that were supposed to go on a hike that we had planned after, you know, one of those meeting after the meetings things. And this one old guy and I were the only people that showed up, and you know, we became friends, like really honestly just friends. And then we started doing a Bible study together, and my sponsor was like, if you talk to him, I will not be your sponsor. And a lot of my wounds are around women. You know, men, I knew what they wanted. I had no problem. Like, I had no problem being around men because that was clear, right? Women, kind of sketch, right? Like, what do you really want? I don't know. So when it didn't feel safe, I was gone. But that friend I made said, hey, maybe, why don't you try AA? So back up a little bit. When my dad was driving me to the psych ward when I was 13 after he found me dying on his floor, I had told him, Dad, you know, I think I'm an alcoholic. And my dad's a recovering alcoholic. Well, he's dry. But he's like, no, you're not an alcoholic. You haven't been through enough yet. But I knew I was powerless then. But I held on to that. And I held on to that during treatment. And then I started going to AA. And crap, I can relate, you know? And because I was just going to go to AA to work my essay program, because obviously women still aren't safe. So, but then I realized I was an alcoholic. My sobriety dates are alcohol and lust are less than a month apart. I needed to admit I was an alcoholic to completely surrender my lust, because just put a beer in my hand and I'm going to lust. Like, that is just, it could be an O'Doul's. It doesn't matter. Like, I get to lust. So I start doing that, you know, and then this old guy and I, you know, we become friends, and then we start to realize, hey, maybe there's a little bit more there. But both of us are working our SA programs, and we really, our focus is on our higher power and our recovery more than anything else. And so we start to consider talking about dating, and he says, you know, the only point I see for dating is to see if we're compatible for marriage. Yeah. But yeah, that sounds good. And like nobody I've ever been with before, ever, because don't you just start with sex and leave it there? And, you know, it wasn't perfect. I relapsed. This is not a justification. I was in school. I hadn't slept. I was starting a new rotation. I got in a car accident. I didn't have insurance. And as I was logging on to get insurance at my new rotation, this guy who I had been avoiding because I knew he was a sex addict. Because as a sex addict, I walk in a room and I know every single other sex addict that is in the room. There is a vibe. There is like something. I know. I can tell if you are, you know, a mile and a half away that you're a sex addict. Sometimes driving in the car, like, I'll look over and somebody's looking at me like they're driving by. It's like I know from them driving from behind me and we're checking each other out. It's the weirdest thing. It's kind of sketchy. So anyways, where was I? So we started to date. I relapsed because I relapsed. And then we ended up hooking up before we got married. And then we had a period where we stopped, and I've been able to be sober since then. So it was prior to when we got married. Not much prior, but nobody's perfect. You know, it's progress, not perfection, right? Working my program. So I worked AA and SA at the same time together. And because I dissociate really easily, my step four, I could work on it about 5 minutes a day. Some days it might be 7 minutes, and some days it was 3 minutes. But I made it a commitment to work on it at least 5 minutes a day. And it took me like a year to finish my step four, but I finished it. And then I did my step five. And, you know, during that time, I had gone back to school, and then I had more anxiety than I had ever had before, and I freaking had to take more time off again. And my pride was like, I'm failing because I'm not with everybody else. And then my higher power goes and tells me, like, I really feel like I'm supposed to choose a different specialty, one I did not want to do because it required relationships. And I don't freaking want to be in a relationship with anybody. I just want to patch you up and let you go, and we'll be good. And my higher power had a different plan. And I am so grateful for it for today. I'm so grateful for it. So I continued to work my steps, and I have continued. And, you know, sometimes I've needed outside help. A lot of times I've needed outside help. And, you know, life is still messy, right? We've had, like, 5 or 6 suicides in the last, six years, including my stepson. And I was not able to have kids. And my husband's a sex offender, and he's on parole or probation until he's 96 years old, so I'm not going to be able to adopt. And the stress of just, you know, the parole probation thing. And, you know, I almost died from sepsis a few years ago, and life is messy. And there is joy. You know, when I first came in to the program, I had made a deal with God. I said, you know, I will work this program to the best of my ability, and I will seek you to the best of my ability for the next year. But if I don't feel better in a year, I'm done. And the only reason I did that is I had 3 younger siblings that are significantly younger than I am, and I was like second mom, and I wanted them to believe that there was hope in this world, even though I didn't believe there was any hope. If I could give that to them, then that was okay. And 14 months later, I realized a year had passed, and I had some joy. And, you know, I continue to get more joy. It doesn't mean I'm always happy, but I am free today. So the gift that I got, I'm seen, I'm loved, and I'm okay. I'm accepted as I am. Broken, human, perfectly imperfect, exactly according to plan. And as I get to hold everything in open hands and recognize that really when it comes down to it, there's God and then there's self, no matter what it is, just down to the basics, that's all it is. Whether it's lust, it's work, it's other people, it's fear, it's either God or it's me. And as I get to continue to practice giving it over to God, I find more and more of that happy and joyous freedom. So thanks for letting me share.